From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made every time someone takes on the role and title of caregiver. That will happen for many of us, and it might happen during a time when we feel unprepared. Someone gets sick, a family member needs our near constant attention. How can we balance the rest of our lives with this new responsibility? Some local faith leaders were concerned with the impact of caregiving on people in their own communities, and they've put together a series of events designed to help. It's called You Don't Have to Do It Alone. This hour, it's a chance to explore the themes that they have selected and to discuss the experience that caregivers have. And I will appeal directly to our listeners this hour. If you are a caregiver, if you have found yourself in this position, we're going to be talking about the work that you've had to do and about caring for the caregivers as well. Hello to our guests. Senior pastor of Parenting Community Church is Tim Alexander. And Pastor Alexander, it's great to have you. Thanks
it's
for being
here.
It's
great to be here.
They call
you
Pastor Tim out there? What do they call
they
you?
They call me a lot of things, but I answer to Pastor Tim. That's
okay.
Fine.
Well, nice to have you. Thank you for being here, Pastor Tim. Ellen O'Connor is Director of Community Services for Fairport Baptist Home. Ellen, welcome to you. Thanks for
being
here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Biagio Zarconi is Community Care Manager for Senior Options for Independence. Biagio, welcome. Why don't you tell us what Senior Options for Independence is?
Oh, thank you for having us on the show, Evan. Senior Options for Independence program is the right arm of the Fairport Baptist Home that reaches out into the Parenting community, helping folks age in place independently and connecting them to services in the area.
How many people are you serving right now?
Well, there's probably a scope of 700 older adults over the age of 60 in the community, and we connect them to various programs. We have a transportation program as well, and educational and experiences for them.
Well, I want to start with Pastor Tim, who reached out to us, and I want to get a sense of how this came together in the first place. Whose idea was this, and how was the sort of the need visualized here?
I've been at PCC for about 5 years, and recently I've been trying to look at the demographics in our area and talk to a number of people. And we have, at our particular church right now, we have a baby boom going on. We have kids and two-year-olds and four-year-olds and more on the way. But Parent and Fairport area is a community that is aging in place. So I looked at that, and then I really surfaced in our own congregation, we have caregivers. So if the idea is to be an intergenerational church and to try to minister in our community, I thought, well, you know, why don't we see if we can do something? Because I know if we have caregivers in our church, there are caregivers in the Fairport Parenting area. So I went over and talked with Ellen and said, what can we do? Because I truly did not want it to be some kind of a theological discussion about age. I wanted it to be something to where we as a church could just be a host for community resources, for people who are experts in the field to try to serve in our community. So that's when I approached Ellen, and they're the ones who brought the expertise to bear.
Yeah, Ellen, why don't you tell us more about what you do?
Well, I'm the Director of Community Services at Fairport Baptist Homes, and that includes our independent senior housing as well as our Senior Options for Independence program. And I've been there about 10 years, and program development is something that I'm involved in. And it became very evident probably 7 or 8 years ago that we needed to do some more support for the caregivers in our community, because Fairport is definitely an aging-in-place area, and it's very much supported by SOFI. But we have limited funding. Funding is staff, so we didn't have enough staff to be able to pull something like this together completely. So it's been on my wish list for quite a while. And lo and behold, one day, Tim Alexander walked in and he said, I'd like to do something around caregiving and caregivers. And I was like, okay, here's our champion. Now we can put this together and do it.
And the four sessions being held at the Parenting Community Church, that's on High Street Extension in Fairport. Easy to find, Parenting Community Church. The first two are already done. You did an introduction to the world of caregiving. And the second session was understanding the sensory health and mental health issues of aging. And can I just ask all three of you, on the question of the mental health issues of aging, and I'll start with Pastor Tim on that. I mean, that can be a big challenge, and we're going to talk about personal experiences in a moment here, but what did you in particular get out of session number two when it came to that issue?
What I really liked about it is the presenter did an excellent job in describing the differences between what are normal aging. As we age, there are certain things that are going to happen. What is the difference between that and dementia and the approach of Alzheimer's? Because there are people who they think something like dementia is happening, and really they overreact and they don't live a full life because they're so afraid of aging. So that's one of the things that was a blessing to me, to learn the distinction of that.
Hmm. What do you think, Ellen?
Well, one of the important things for me was that if a person does have dementia, that means there's actual physical differences in their brain. And so there's things that you can do and things you can't do. If a person who has dementia isn't understanding the connection between things, no matter how much explaining you do, they won't ever understand the connection that you're trying to make. On the other hand, the presenter also gave us some tools to use and ways to interact with people that keeps the stress low and honors the person for what they can understand and achieve and doesn't escalate a situation to terrible stress and frustration.
Biagio, when it comes to aging at home, when we talk mental health, how much of a fine line is that for caregivers, understanding the challenges there and sort of navigating those waters?
Well, as Ellen and Tim mentioned, a big piece of this program was to educate folks on those issues of aging, okay? And I find myself, when I'm making home visits to individuals, that there is a lot of familial dynamics that are going on, both internally, and folks are dealing with the caregiver burnout, the stress that is involved with that. So even though there might not necessarily be any mental health issues at the onset, over time, throughout the process of aging, and you'll start finding some of those things take root in the family dynamics in the home as well. So you have those internal processes that are happening, but then there's also those dynamics that are happening in the family arrangements there. So,
listeners, if you want to share your experiences, I'd love to hear from you. You can email the program, connections@wxxi.org, or you can find us on Twitter at Evan Dawson or producer Megan Mack at MMack Media. You can call the program toll-free as we talk about caregiving. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. The last two sessions in the four-session series that they're calling You Don't Have to Do It Alone, the events for caregivers. The last two are on the last Tuesday and Thursday of this month.
Mm-hmm.
So Tuesday, May 29th, and Thursday, May 31st. Session 3, titled Resources, What's Out There for Myself and My Loved One. Session 4, Who Cares for the Caregiver? Let's talk about those two sort of in a way that people understand exactly what they might, how they might benefit and what they need to know about the session. Pastor Tim, Session 3, what time is it, by the way? Tuesday, May 29th, what time?
We start at 6:30.
6:30, and you don't have to be a member of Parenting Community
Church.
No.
We just want people who are dealing with this in their life and in our communities come out for this. We're just trying to offer a resource.
Okay. And so what's the goal for Tuesday, May 29th, in the session titled Resources, What's Out There for Myself and My Loved One?
I think the idea of knowing you don't have to do it alone. There are resources out there, and we're going to have people who are qualified in different areas. And I think Ellen and Biagio, who've been putting that together, they have more to say about it. But letting people know that they are not struggling with this alone. There's some actual comfort that can come from that.
All right. So, Ellen, what's kind of on the menu for that day?
Right. Well, we are fortunate to be in a very service-rich community, but people don't know two things. They don't know what services they need, and they don't know how to connect up with those services. So we're hoping on Tuesday, May 29th, to bridge that gap. And we're going to have a multitude of agencies and organizations on a panel, and they will talk about the supports and services that they can bring and how to connect up with people. And by the time folks leave, they should have a pretty good understanding on where they can go to get support.
Okay. Biagio?
We're excited. We're not replicating something that hasn't been done. There's experts out in the field that are doing this in the full scale of Rochester. And these local agencies are the main draw. Folks are going to come and learn what's out there, make connections. There'll be resources available for individuals. There's a question and answering period, and we'll ask the panel. Ellen O'Connor will be moderating the panel, certain questions about what they do in the community and how to connect to these folks in terms of caregiving needs.
All right, so that is May 29th. That's a Tuesday at
6:30
at Parent and Community Church in Fairport for session three. Session four is Thursday, May 31st. Who cares for the caregiver? Biagio, what are we expecting there?
Well, this is one of the most important points of the program. Because of the caregiver burden, quote unquote, the stress that is involved, we have to kind of see how do we replenish our energies? What can we do to help alleviate some of those stresses? And I believe we're having Doris Green with NYSERC, Ellen, is that correct?
Yes.
She's going to be there, and she's going to be talking about the program through Lifespan, Powerful Tools for Caregivers. And she's the expert, and we'll also have some personal stories of individuals who have done it before, who are doing it now, and open that up to question and answering to the group.
Okay, Ellen, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I'm going to add that there are 67 million family caregivers in this country. That's a lot of people. And of the population in general, 39% of the population is in a caregiving role. When we were driving to the studio this afternoon, and conversation was around caregiving, we identified that every one of us is in a caregiver role. All different, but all in caregiving roles. And so, a couple of the other things about caregivers is there's a tremendous cost. There's a tremendous cost saving to the community that caregivers contribute to, because family caregivers are generally not in a paid situation. But there's also a huge cost to caregivers in stress, in physical health, and in mental health. So our goal in the final session is to offer those things that are out there. Again, we are a service-rich, program-rich community, but we want to connect people to those things.
To me, one of the things we were talking about, people don't understand that they are already acting as caregivers. In fact, some people really kind of avoid the term. They don't like the term. But what you're doing, when you're putting catheters in, when you're cleaning up from incontinence, when you're washing these clothes, when you're having to prepare food in a certain way and keep to a medical schedule with their medications, I mean, you're a caregiver. You're doing that. And yes, you love and it's your family, et cetera, but you are doing that as a caregiver, and God bless you. And one of the things we're trying to do is say, you are not alone. Other people are doing this, and they've done it, and a number of them have done it very well, and they've grown from it.
I remember one of my earliest memories of family was in the late days of the life of my great-grandmother. And all I remember as a young boy was hearing, she fell. And as a young child, you think, well, I fall all the time. I don't understand. Mm. When you're 3 or 4 years old, it doesn't really register as a major threat. We had a conversation about the high cost of dying in funerals recently. And Kent Gardner from the Center for Governmental Research mentioned that his mother had fallen before her death. And he said, boy, I'm in my 60s now, and at a certain point, it's going to be no more stairs for me. it's just so, and it can happen so quickly. And anybody listening who's had a family member fall or had just a phone call where something has happened, all of a sudden you become, as Pastor Tim just said, a caregiver, when it didn't really strike you that was going to be the case, or it wasn't something that you necessarily prepare for. So let me go ahead and read a question from Martha in Rochester that came in. We'll take some of your calls and hear from some of our listeners in our second half hour. If you want to call 844-295-TALK, it's toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Martha in Rochester says, what can caregivers do when they need aids or assistance and the people provided by local agencies don't seem to be a good fit? My family cycled through a series of aids through a local agency, but could not find someone who was reliable. Aids either didn't show up, were late, or did not follow doctor's orders for medications. What can families do to find help so they don't burn out? I'll start with Biagio. That's a hard question.
Well, thank you, Martha, for that question. And Evan, we often find that there isn't much often communication that happens between different agencies, and that sometimes folks fall in between the cracks. You know, here at the SOFI program, one of our objectives and goals is to kind of navigate and walk individuals through that process. And, you know, even though we make a connection, you know, our goal is to see it through. We have community care managers in the SOFI program that are very expert in the field, and we always try to build relationships and partner with local agencies to see that that care is being happening. Ellen, you can probably talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, Ellen,
I can. One of the biggest issues in our industry, if you want to call it that, right now, is workforce issues. There are not enough aides. The agencies can't hire enough. The long-term care facilities can't hire enough. There's not enough people coming on board. They're not well paid. People make more, you know, the saying goes, flipping burgers, than they do doing difficult personal care for people. So I would suggest to this family that part of the solution is that you will need to layer services, that having an agency aid service come in and be the total solution, that may not work out. And you may have to layer some other kinds of solutions onto the issue.
Ellen, would you get tough with aides if you really thought they were either treating someone poorly or ignoring doctors' orders?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the people that we treasure the most are our elders, we say, are our elders and our young. And the people that we expect to care for them, we pay the least. On the same hand, we expect that care to be wonderful. And so, yeah, someone who's not providing good care would not continue to provide care in my family.
And so I think it's important that that we kind of zero in on the notion that Pastor Tim and Ellen have brought up, that everyone here has become a caregiver at some point, even if you didn't, you know, grab onto that moniker right away, that you were doing some of the work. And Pastor Tim, why don't you tell us about some of what that has meant for you?
My father-in-law, John Oliver Chandler, was a World War II veteran and one of the greatest men I've known in my life. And the last number of years, he suffered from dementia. And I can't say enough kind things. My wife and I at the time lived in Nashville, but he lived in Atlanta. His son, Johnny, lived in Macon, and his daughter, Gloria, lived close by in Kennesaw. So together as a family, the things that we did over the last number of years of his life, we rearranged his home. Johnny, God bless him, Johnny totally redid the basement of his house where they didn't have to climb stairs anymore. Gloria became executor and dealt with all the legal things and the tax issues and how to pay house your property tax in the state of Georgia. And then my mother-in-law suffered a debilitating heart attack. They'd been in this house for, my goodness, they'd been on the same street for 80 years. They'd been in this house that they built, and she couldn't care for him anymore. And it was very difficult for the family to be at a place to where they could now move out, because in his dementia, he was such a sweet man. And my brother and sister-in-law were so good to him. But I know that our family, my wife's family, labored under this kind of existence for a number of years. So when my wife and I, when we would take the time to go from Nashville to Atlanta, I always said I had midnight duty. When I would go down for the weekends, he would get the midnight wanderings. And I would stay up with him over the weekend on the nights and guide him around, because when he lived in the downstairs, he forgot where the bedrooms were. He forgot where the bathroom was. He forgot where the door was that he would go downstairs in. Okay? So we had to protect him from himself, but there were these wonderful times, Evan, that I remember so well, that there would be a glimpse of John would come back. And I could tell him that I loved him. And I remember one time he looked at me and he said, "And I love you too," because he knew who I was for about 5 minutes. But that dynamic of a family, I guarantee you that neither Gloria nor Johnny nor my wife saw themselves as caregivers. This is just what families did. But my experience is that they did yeoman's work, especially Gloria, did awesome work in just making life safe so that they could live so much of their life with that kind of freedom and safety that they had at that stage in life earned.
And you know, Pastor Tim, your family, that happens. You don't know when you kind of take on a caregiver role, if that means a month, a year, if it means longer term. And that uncertainty, I imagine, can be difficult because it might impact something as simple and privileged as saying, I don't know if we can take a vacation this year, to I don't know if I can continue at work. I don't know if I have to move. Those are big questions. And uncertainty, I imagine, for every family in that role can be difficult.
Oh, I'll just describe mine, and I'm sure that Ellen and Biagio have their own experiences. I moved up here 5 years ago. And I moved up here in July of 2013. My mother-in-law actually passed away about a month before we came because she had had a debilitating heart attack and also broke her hip. So kind of walking through that, and then it was very, very difficult for us to move up knowing that now Polly's father, that's my wife, Polly, was in a facility. He was safe. He was cared for. And so we would just think about that, you know. And I thought so much of my sister-in-law, Gloria, because now we're not coming back on the weekends. And families make those kinds of compromises, those kinds of decisions, and you do. The guilt we felt at certain levels when we left. And then he passed away in we were up here in July, and he passed away in February. And from our perspective, it was such a blessing because he really was no longer himself at a certain level. But that's family real life, as far as I'm concerned. When you talk about how do you do, knowing, I know that what we went through, we're not alone. Other people have gone through so much more for so much longer with other people in their family. So I'm kind of tender about it, really. I think we ought to pay attention to it.
Ellen, what about you in terms of your own work as a caregiver?
Right. Well, there's all kinds of caregiving. There's what Tim described as changing catheters and dealing with incontinence. There's also, mom's got to get to the doctor. Somebody's got a driver or, you know, who's going to pick up the prescriptions, that sort of thing. In my own family, my dad passed about 18 months ago. At 97, and he and my mother were maintaining their independence in their own home with very little help from the family. Some help, but not a lot of help. And, you know, now, 18 months later, it's being more and more difficult for mom to maintain this home. And the interesting thing in my situation, I have two brothers and two sisters, and everyone is wonderfully involved, and different ones in the family are picking up, different responsibilities. Somebody's taking care of the checkbook and paying the bills, and somebody else makes sure she gets to church, etc. But when I talk with my brothers and sisters, this is family, and this is what family does. And when I talk about caregiving, that's kind of, they think they have to do it alone. And that's kind of one of the reasons we named our workshop series, You Don't Have to Do It Alone. But there are so many caregiving families out there, mine included, who just feel like, no, this is it. This is our job, and we'll cope with it.
The series is You Don't Have to Do It Alone, a series of events for caregivers, hosted at Parenton Community Church in Fairport. Sessions 1 and 2 were earlier this month. Sessions 3 and 4 on the subjects of resources and who cares for the caregiver are coming up on May 29th, that's a Tuesday, and May 31st, that's a Thursday. Pastor Tim says you don't even have to be a member of the church.
No, you don't.
6:30 p.m. on those nights, and they just want people to understand what that, you you know, what is out there on these subjects? Who cares for the caregiver and resources? Biagio, what about you? If you had experienced work as a caregiver,
I've been thinking about this, listening to my fellow colleagues. You know, Evan, everybody's situation is unique, and you know, I respect everyone's situation. In my own family, in our own viewpoint, I am a caregiver for my younger brother who has cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. I've always known to be a caregiver right from my early age as an older son of an Italian family. So, you know, it's unsaid rule that we help him and our family members always. And sometimes some of our own personal commitments and or jobs take a back seat. And we know that not all families can do that in today's society. But I would say I've had to struggle myself sometimes with some of that angst and you know, how the conflict involved and how do I navigate all of that. But I would say to folks, communicating your intentions and your expectations with the loved ones and have a conversation about that would help alleviate some of that stress that is felt. Having a plan of action. I won't change anything with my role. He's one of my best friends. He's intelligent. He can contribute to society, but I'm going to aid him in that journey wherever that ends up.
I had a couple of phone calls from off air from listeners who just wanted to share their thoughts real briefly with our panel here. Anne in Penfield says, for people who are looking for aides outside of agencies, try your church, your doctor's office, vet's office. Compassionate people are everywhere. Mm. That comes from Anne. I wonder what our panel thinks about that.
I would absolutely agree. And at the Senior Options for Independence program, we do work with a lot of private pay individuals that do caregiving for elders. So that certainly is a route you can go.
Okay. Pastor Tim?
Well, I think as I listened to that comment from Ann, the thing that kept coming up, families need to initiate this in terms of they need to have some energy about it. Instead of feeling like I'm victimized by this existence, mm-hmm. they need to say, you know, I'm going to do the best I can with this, and I'm going to seek out resources. And that's hard. It's hard to kind of walk through the pain of that, but I have found that when you begin to take control of the questions you're going to ask and the resources you're going to seek, you begin to feel powerful. And one of the most important gifts we can give to each other is when we empower someone to be more in control of their existence. And if that means to seek out caregivers in a church community or private, but the idea that you are out there doing this, then I applaud you.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah. You want to add to that, Biagio?
Well, no, you said it elegantly, perfectly. What courage. It is very difficult. You know, some of the fortunate blessings that I've had working with older adults is that they have stories, they have narratives. There's wisdom there. They've done it before. Who am I to necessarily say, you know, you need to do it this way? But what courage to go out of your very own and ask for help. Some people don't like to do that. Resiliency and courage.
A story came to my mind. My wife and I went to the Lilac Festival yesterday. We were just walking around and remembered. We met at a college a long time ago, and our group sought out a family, the Schoenberger family down in Arkansas. And they had a severely disabled son who had been that way since he was like 9 months old. And now he was in his 20s. And our group went over and washed clothes for his family and did all kinds of things. And what I remember is that his mother was so welcoming of us. And that was one of my first kind of introductions at an early college age of kind of getting beyond my young person's comfort zone where I only have to be around healthy people. And being able to go and serve that way was a blessing. And then I remember what it was for her. Now that I think about it, I'm probably her age now, what it was like for her to accept that kind of help. Mm. For her to have these different people come into her home and wash her clothes and do her shopping for her. But she was so gracious about it. And I looked at that as one of the high points of collaboration between generations. And there are a number of those occasions out there if we will seek them out or perhaps even attempt to create them.
Here's another Ann, different Ann calling from Rochester, who called in to say there's a severe shortage of paid caregivers, and her family couldn't find someone, so they created their own business for just their family, and that way the family as caregivers could get paid. Have we heard that kind of scenario before?
Yes, there is a consumer-directed program that I believe operates through Medicaid. And in that instance, family can be paid for the caregiving that they do.
Okay. I'm just seeing in some of our research notes from producer Megan Mack, in some states, family caregivers of Medicaid recipients can be paid through the Structured Family Caregiving Program. In order to participate, you must be referred by your local agency on aging, which is typically run at the county level. The program is run by Caregiver Homes, which is available in Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Ohio, Indiana, and other states soon. So that's one possible outlet, but interesting. And thank you, Ann, for that phone call as well here. One other quick phone call, then we're going to get a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to bring in a woman named Kathy who's going to share her story as a caregiver. I'm going to get Noelle's phone call real briefly here. Go ahead, Noelle.
Hey there. I was wondering what Pastor Tim would say to his friends and parishioners about the theological meaning of administering morphine to your loved one.
That's an awesome question that I'm not really going to be prepared to do a lot of talking about right now. I'm just not gonna jump off that.
You want to think about it some more.
I want to think about that some more, but I do believe that caregivers are faced with that dilemma all the time, and I think it requires a lot of thought. And I'm not gonna stand here 6 feet above contradiction in a pulpit and tell you what to do.
No, that's okay. We went through that process, and I thought, oh my goodness, what am I doing? And, grandma wants to go be with Jesus, and then sometimes she doesn't. But, we're making her comfortable, and I have no preparation from my church for dealing with that.
Well, I think to respond to you a little bit more, I think finding ways and categories to think it through, that's, in other words, not letting the situation decide for you. You be in charge of the information you research and the decisions you make. But that's about as far as I'm going to go on that today. Thanks.
Hmm. Noelle, thank you for the phone call, Noelle. And I appreciate Pastor Tim's candor in saying, this one requires a little more time for me to spend before I extemporaneously jump on a microphone with tens of thousands of people listening. But that's a fascinating question.
It is.
It was. Thank you, Noelle, for that. We're here because we are talking about the series, You Don't Have to Do It Alone. It's a series of events for caregivers hosted by Parenton Community Church. And we've got some of the folks involved in that series with us. They've had sessions 1 and 2 already, and sessions 3 and 4 are coming your way on Tuesday, May 29th, and Thursday, May 31st at 6:30 p.m., open to the community at Parenton Community Church. On the 29th, they're talking about the resources that are out there for caregivers, and on Thursday the 31st, they're talking about who cares for the caregiver. Let's get our only break of the hour and come back and share more of your feedback on this subject that touches all of us next. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, we hear from both sides in one of the heated debates in Rochester now. It's about the Cobbs Hill development, and if it sounds parochial, it's the kind of debate that happens in communities all across the country. What's the right kind of development? What makes for truly affordable housing? Is this the right deal for a community? We'll discuss it Tuesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and we're talking about caregiving, and I want to bring in Kathy Little, who is a caregiver who's on the line with us, taking the time to share her story. Kathy, thanks for taking the time. How are you?
I'm great. How about you?
Well, we're good here, and I think that our panel, in their own ways, have just reminded us that almost everybody ends up as a caregiver at some point for someone. And our producer Megan Mack was sharing that your story was touching and important to hear. So why don't you kind of take me back to when you first thought of yourself as a caregiver?
Oh, probably 9 years ago with my mother-in-law. She lives with Parkinson's disease. And so that's when the journey started with my mother-in-law. Just taking care, things had changed. She had gone into a nursing home, And I've appreciated this conversation because we need to have this conversation because if I had not been part of a network where I empowered myself to seek out information, empowered myself to get the resources that I needed, empowered myself to ask the right questions, I wouldn't be able to share my story in a way that really can help others. And we do that within a group of churches that I'm affiliated with. So this is a wonderful conversation because I always say in this journey, this nine-year journey with my mother-in-law and now with my mother also, I have not been able to do any of this in my own strength. So my journey is really all about just trusting. I pray, I trust, and then I quiet myself because I know that all the resources, all the people, all the connections that we need to give both of them that quality life, that it will be provided for them. And it has happened, but it's all about me just knowing how to connect and listen to the social workers and do my homework, and that's what we've done as a family.
Kathy, I want to ask you about what you've experienced when it comes to burnout, because anybody who's been caregiving for 9 years is going to occasionally have moments of stress or strain, and session 4 in the You Don't Have to Do It Alone series that's coming up on May 31st is Who Cares for the Caregiver? So why don't you take me back to, I think I was just reading that just last week you kind of felt like you had a little bit of a breakdown. What happened?
I had a breakdown. I had a moment. It was overwhelming. I had taken my mother-in-law to the doctors, my mother-in-law has refused to take any medicine. So I respect this 94-year-old woman and the decisions that she's making, I'm also very honest with her as to our goal is to keep her at home. She has the two best aides on this side of heaven. And our goal is to give her that quality life at home. So I have these candid conversations with her that if you don't do certain things, you're going to put yourself in a situation that you probably end up in a nursing home. So we went to the doctors last Friday, and the doctor basically confirmed the progression. And we talked once again about the medicine. It was just overwhelming because I could see it. I could see the progression over the last 9 years. It became overwhelming for me. So once we left and I was in my car alone, I had a moment. But I was able to get on the phone with my husband, talk about it, share, and we're in our journey. But now she's made a decision to take some medicine, do some things to give her some relief. So I think it's, for me, it's quieting myself and understanding that I can't do any of this in my own strength, so I'm not going to try to.
And this is where caregiving, I think, gets so layered. You know, Kathy's been telling us about caring for your mother-in-law who is 94, has Parkinson's disease, and that diagnosis 9 years out now. So 9 years of caregiving, but your own mother has different health issues, mm-hmm. and now you're sort of navigating those. And can you tell me how you've sort of tried to be a caregiver / advocate for two people, knowing that occasionally just the strain of caregiving for one person has been difficult at times?
Well, once again, it's not in my own strength. So everything that we're doing, I am engaging my family, I'm engaging my siblings, I'm asking, I'm informing people, I'm letting people know that mommy, she has a doctor's appointment on this day and this at time, whatever time, can you take her? So I'm keeping the communication open. We have our family meetings where we sit and we talk. So we are blessed to have a family that all of us care and all of us play a part in some way or the other, whether it's transportation, whether it's picking up medicine. So I learned early that this does not necessarily belong to me. I believe God trusts me to advocate, to be there for them, to pray for them, but I'm not supposed to own every aspect of this process.
And before I let you go, Kathy, because I think you've given our panel a lot to talk about with this, I know there are certain things that you feel caregivers need, and you take Mondays essentially for yourself, is that right?
Absolutely.
I didn't mean to cut into your Monday then.
No. I only did. Yeah. But no, I do. I take a day. I take a day where I do not take care of, I don't make any doctor's appointments. I don't pay any bills for them. It's my time. And that helps me with my, not being burned out, but at the same time, throughout my quiet day, I can process. I can start writing those to-do lists. Things will come to me when I'm just at a place where I'm just relaxed. I'm focusing. I'm really just allowing myself to be present.
That's great for you. And the last question I'll ask you, Kathy, is this. You know, you've now had the better part of a decade as a caregiver, and so you have some experience knowing that caregiving is not something that we enter into knowing exactly how long that is, typically anyway. That, again, as we said earlier this hour, it could be a month, a year, 5 years, 10 years, more. What would you say to our listeners who will inevitably become caregivers themselves and think, you know, I don't know what this means. I don't know how long-term it is. How do you go into that role knowing that it is going to potentially be years, and that you're going to prepare for the role to do the best job you can as a caregiver, but also to take care of yourself as best you can?
I would say, just like I had to, I met with the staff at Lifespan when my mother-in-law was at St. Anne's. They had the best social workers and physical therapists and, dietitians. So we took that time and we gathered the information that we needed. And then also I'm part of a coalition, the Interdenominational Health Ministry Coalition, where this is a coalition of churches. And with that, around that table, churches are offering different workshops, 4-6 week workshops on caregiving. So we're networking. So that's what I would, I recommend that to people now. I work also at my church. A lot of our members are getting older, so we're having these same kind of conversations within churches. So I would really recommend people to immediately connect to the resources and know what you're able to do and know what you're not able to do.
Kathy, good luck to you and your family, and thank you for sharing your experience.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
What do you think, Pastor Tim? That was beautiful, wasn't it?
Oh, I feel for her in her caregiving situation, but I'm inspired by Kathy, because when I talked previously about the idea of going out and being initiating and feeling empowered, all I kept on hearing from her were that she was ticking those boxes. I sought out resources. I talked about it with my family. I took private time. I drew boundaries. All those things, those are all a part of being empowered, of not being the whipping post for caregiving, but actually being out there and doing it to the best you can. She was the one who was, that was inspiring to me to hear. And the other thing that I thought of was how important it is, because she listed about 2 or 3 different communities that she's a part of. Obviously her family community, obviously her church community, and then the coalition community that's connected to both of them. But the idea of these different communities, those become arenas or spheres to where she can learn something new, share something new, be encouraged by somebody different. I mean, I was very inspired by Kathy. That was awesome.
Ellen, what do you think?
Well, I was also very inspired by Kathy. Kathy, you're what we would call a fearless caregiver. And just even in the way that you talked about the women that you care for, et cetera. For instance, you said your mother-in-law lives with Parkinson's. You didn't say she suffers with Parkinson's or suffers with dementia, as some folks do. No, she lives with Parkinson's. So the emphasis is on the living and having the best quality of life possible. And as Pastor Tim said, you know, all the other things you talked about, you didn't own the whole thing yourself. Mm. There's others to involve with it. You take care of yourself. You have a quiet day. And that is so critically important. And again, the communities that you belong to. And where you are, the way you are navigating your caregiving journey, that is what we're trying to introduce people to and help them to connect with through this workshop that we're doing.
Biagio?
Boy, Kathy, what are you doing Thursday, May 31st? a couple of thoughts. Sometimes we feel like we have to be a superman or superwoman in this. But through her testimony, she kind of took this on as part of her very own vocation to serve. But in doing that, she also built a support team, like Ellen, you were talking. It was very important. And then also the fact that you gave your permission to be human and breaking down and kind of owning that. What a testament to caregiving. So I appreciate this story. It's so good to hear that there are ambassadors of caregiving out there doing the work.
Karen writes to the program and says, Evan, this topic hits close to home. I worked as an in-home elder care caregiver for more than 10 years. When it was my turn to move my mother into my home, there were issues I was not prepared for. Foremost was that the dynamic between my mother and I that changed. The stress that develops for both the caregiver and the person needing care, well, it can create havoc on many levels. It wasn't until her needs exceeded what I could do for her at home that she went to a facility, and not only was she safer and well cared for, but she and I regained our mother-daughter relationship. Mm. And she was asking for us to consider that aspect. Every relationship's different. Every mm-hmm. person's needs are different. But that's, Karen, I know that's a lot to share, and I appreciate the email. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, Ellen, you know, how we can kind of navigate these moments. I'm thinking about my brothers. I should probably have a conversation. Which one of us is if we have a need in our family to become caregivers, who is suited? Can we do that now? How quickly can we prepare for that? And then how can we make sure that, you know, we're not trying to have that relationship fray as much as possible? Because I really feel for Karen with that email.
Right. What Karen is talking about is so common. It's very difficult to care for an adult that had been your caregiver when you were a child. And sometimes there's some role reversal, which is really uncomfortable for both sides of this relationship. So it's a very, very common thing. And, you know, to work through this part of it is where I see the communities that you're involved in and support groups where you can share your experiences and understand that, yeah, I'm not the only one that's dealing with this. This is, you know, pretty common. And also to be able to learn some techniques and skills, put a few things in your toolbox so that as you are the tenor of your relationship. For instance, one of our presenters just said, when you are approaching someone to care for them, you greet before you treat. So that might even be, you know, a tool for someone who is finding that this relationship is now very strained. But if you come in and you're like, Mom, didn't you take your medicine? How many times do I have to say, you know, at noon you need to take your medicine? Hey, Mom, you know, how are you today? I see you had a good lunch. Did you enjoy that? How about your medication? Did you take that? So there can be a different way of approaching someone about something that helps these relationships. But it's all stuff you learn either in counseling or in support groups or interactions with other caregivers.
Can I pick up on something you said, Evan?
Yeah.
Because to me, it's critical. You said, my brothers and I need to have this conversation.
We do.
Well, here's... Most people do not make good decisions when they are under attack, when they are pressed, when they are being reactive. The time to have these kinds of conversations are early on, when you can begin to talk, not in the midst of crisis, but actually thoughtfully, we can see this coming. I have my brother's 2 years older than I. My dad's going to turn 82 in a couple of weeks. We continue to have these conversations along the way, and part of that is because both my brother and I have been involved in pastoral care for a long time, and we've seen what happens when it's almost like crisis or trauma or caregiving sneak up on somebody, and then the family is under attack. Now's the time. So what you said was critical. So do that.
Now I got to live it. I got to do that.
You do. And Evan, there's a wonderful thing called the Conversation Project. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. It is a national movement. And I can't come up with, there's some well-known people that are involved in putting.
What's the easiest way to find it? Just Google the
Google
Conversation Project?
The Conversation Project.
Oh, I'm going to do that.
And it has all kinds of materials that you can use as a family to have these kinds of conversations. And in fact, Senior Options for Independence is planning another seminar all around the Conversation Project. The date hasn't been set, but you're invited.
I'm supposed to be able to have tough conversations. I do it every day for a living. But thank you, the Conversation Project. And real quick here, Pastor Tim, let our listeners know if they want to come to the last two seminars in the You Don't Have to Do It Alone series, how should they contact you? What do they need to know?
Go to our website, www.pcchurch.org. You can find it there, or call Fairport Baptist Homes, or get on your website.
Actually, there's an events line, 585-388-2347, and you can register your information there, and a community care manager will be in contact with you.
So, all right, those are where you connect.
All right, May 29th is Session 3, May 31st, Session 4. Good luck to you with all of that, and thank you to all three of our guests for sharing their experience.
Thank you for letting us be here.
Wonderful conversation. Our thanks to John Andrus, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a lovely afternoon. We're back with you Tuesday, and member-supported public radio.